You are listening to Keystone Stock Talk Show, episode 250.
If this is your first time listening, then thanks for stopping by. This podcast is produced every week for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at www.keystocks.com. Come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed or on iTunes. You can also follow us on Twitter at Keystocks and on Facebook, and keep submitting your stocks via the usual social channels or at our website, keystocks.com, for our Your Stock Our Take segment. And we just might review your stock in an upcoming show and let you know if it is a buy, sell, or hold.
It's great to be back in the saddle again this week. To start the show, Brett's going to kick off with a preview of Big Tech's Q1 earnings slated to be released over the next couple of days, including numbers from Microsoft, Meta Platforms, Alphabet, and Tesla. I will hit the viewer mailbag to answer a question on TFI International Inc., symbol TFII, a North American leader in transportation and logistics. The stock has been a long-term winner, and a viewer asks if the recent pullback is an opportunity or a sign of negative things to come. Aaron revisits his take on X-Row Technology, symbol EXRO in the TSX, an e-mobility technology company that is developing an advanced power control, electronics, and propulsion system for electric vehicles. The stock has cratered 51% year-to-date, 75% over the past year. Aaron reviews X-Row today and takes a look at some of the hate mail he received when he recommended viewers avoid the stock 9 months ago. Finally, Brennan answers a question on TELUS Corporation, symbol T on the TSX, the Canadian telecommunications giant, which has seen its share price lose 37% year-to-date. The viewer asks Brennan, what is causing the declines and whether it may continue or there's an opportunity in the stock today. All right, let's get to the show. I'm going to welcome my co-host, Mr. Aaron Dunn, and the Killer Bees, Brett and Brennan. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Excellent, excellent.
Yep, big dub for the Canucks last night.
Oh, excellent start to the playoffs. I don't want to jinx it, knock on wood, but the Canucks, my Canucks, won their first game. Brennan's Oilers, or the steaming Coilers, as I like to call them, they will be playing tonight as we record this. So,
who are the Oilers?
We'll hope they take a hearty loss. What? Sorry?
Who are the Oilers playing?
The Kings.
Brennan?
The Kings.
LA.
There you go. Yeah, the Kings. Yeah. It's 3 years in a row, right?
Yeah, yeah. Ryan's trying to put me on the spot like I don't know, like I'm not a
I know.
Let's be honest. I'm a fair weather fan, let's be honest. But it would be pretty cool to see Vancouver beat the Preds here and the Oilers beat LA, so then they match up against each other and go head to head.
Yeah. That would be good. We'll be traveling to Edmonton then as a group to injure Connor McDavid. And then watch the game. Maybe watch the game, maybe just to injure. All right. Well, we had a poll last week on inflation. Brett, you're going to bring that up now?
Yeah.
And so let us know exactly what it was.
Yeah. Last week we had, I asked, in both the US and Canada, CPI has increased so far in 2024. Both US actually increased, I think it was November and December as well, with Canada, we only had a few months. And I asked, is higher inflation coming back? Are we going to go back up? And 13% said it will trend down. 43% said it is the new norm level of inflation. And as well, at 43%, inflation will trend back up. So our viewers believe that inflation is either at the level or going up for the most part.
So, I mean, interesting, because I said that I thought inflation was going to continue to go down, particularly in Canada. So I just pulling up a chart here of the inflation rate that I will share with you.
Share with us. Awesome. Good to see. Brennan, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I was just looking at the budget deficits over time, because I'm sure that the new deficit that's being proposed isn't going to help inflation come down. But
yeah, I think maybe next week, while I let my blood settle, to a level that I can get to. Maybe we'll touch on the new capital gains, the proposed tax there, because you know my feelings on tax, capital gains, generally speaking, being taxed.
Particularly tax that disincentivizes investment. So here we have, so this is the five-year chart of the inflation rate in Canada, peaking here at about 8.1% in June of 2022. And since then, we've seen a pretty steady slide down. So right now, as of March anyways of this year, down at 2.9%. So actually back within the target range of the Bank of Canada, 2-3%, albeit up at the very, very top. So if we were to look at the U.S., by comparison, you know, similar situation, it peaked at 9.1%. So they're a little bit behind us in the fight to inflation, fight to ease inflation. But of course, the economy is much stronger down there. And that's a large part of the reason
much
why.
Stronger.
Yeah. So right now, 3.5% in the US. So obviously, good progress made. I mean, we're no longer at a point where inflation is at extreme levels. Obviously, still a little bit higher than we want to see it, but making progress.
Yeah, and that kind of dovetails into rate cuts, whether we have the, I mean, at some point, as I understand, there was anywhere between 4 and 6 rate cuts expected for the U.S. markets. And now they're, you know, pricing in about 1 this year. So, I mean, that was quite optimistic in terms of... Well, if you wanted on the rate cut side, if you wanted
I wouldn't even be surprised if I think it's June is the next Bank of Canada meeting. I wouldn't be surprised if they still waited and they just wanted to wait until
in Canada,
until inflation was back below 2.5. And then the U.S., they're thinking, you know, definitely not in early summer, like maybe in the fall.
Yeah, September, I think, is, you know, what they're thinking. But I mean, it keeps getting pushed back.
So. Yeah. Well, they're not even within that 2-3% target band, right? So,
And then I was hearing, sorry, Brad. Once I was hearing, the slight sell off that we've seen in markets generally was investors disappointed we weren't seeing nearer term rate cuts. I mean, from my perspective, valuations are at significant longer term highs that would indicate that you need a pullback in the market. So anyways, sorry, Brett.
So at the end of last year, so we're talking November, December, most of the analysts expected US and Canadian rate cuts to be somewhere either late Q1 or early Q2. They would start to do a quarter or 25 basis point cuts over time. And then that's when you still had like the 4-6 estimates. And then once we were actually into Q1, we saw that get pushed out into Q2. And now we're really looking at Q3. So when is the pushback going to stop? I think Canada still could be a bit sooner because we are more interest rate sensitive due to how our mortgages are structured. That's a big deal here compared to how they are more fixed in the US, where we're more variable since you only have your 5-year variable. So, and since we are so housing dominated in Canada, that does actually impact our economy a lot more. And also we did initially hike a bit sooner. So it's not exactly surprising Canada's starting to see a bit sooner than the US, at least. Or half a percent lower still.
Yeah. Well, it should be interesting to monitor, but something we're monitoring right now is big tech earnings coming up. We have Microsoft, Meta Platforms, Alphabet or Google, and Tesla on the docket this week. Always tend to move the market, certainly move the needle on those stocks over the course of the week, depending on whether they miss or hit or exceed, and then their guidance or the commentary for management in the quarterly conference calls that we'll see. So Brett has put together a bit of a preview of the upcoming earnings coming this week. And there's more than just upcoming, more than just the 4 that I named, but over the next week to 10.
Yeah, we're going to look at those 4 this time around, then maybe we'll look at another ones down the line as they are a bit of the ways out. So we're going to be looking at Tesla, Meta, Microsoft, and Alphabet. Tesla reports on the 23rd, Meta on the 24th, and Microsoft and Alphabet or Google report on the 25th, as every headline still likes to call it Google and not Alphabet. I think that's pretty common to see. But even if you don't own these companies directly or only have a minor stake in an ETF or something, it still is important to at least have a general grasp of what's going on in them because they do move the market so much. If you're wondering, oh, all my stocks are up today. It could just be because one of these companies had great earnings, or of course, if they had poor earnings, they could plummet the market at the same time, especially in anything tech adjacent or on the NASDAQ or in the US. As you can see here, all NASDAQ listed. And as well, of course, Amazon is out on the 30th, Apple on the 2nd, May the 2nd, and NVIDIA on May 22nd. And that will round out the magnificent seven of last year, which even though that you see that headline quite a bit less these days, as Tesla seems to have dropped off of most analysts' top seven, I guess. But we'll still cover it here for now. So first up, we're looking at Tesla. TSLA on the NASDAQ. This stock has had a rough 2024 and is down 43% to $142. So the earnings really could be a pivotal moment for the company's near term, as they've had just such negative momentum. And we aren't momentum traders, but when you do have these negative sentiments, it will hit the stock. And if you have a great earnings, exceeds expectations, where analysts too low, you can obviously have a significant turnaround. And as so far, that means Brennan's start of the year prediction is correct, unfortunately. And I think his psychological short would have been, what, $238, something like that? So he's well in the money. Yeah, well in the money with his psychological short. But analysts are expecting earnings per share to drop by 42% as well, which is quite in line with what the year-to-date drop of the stock price is, ironically. That is expected to come in at 50 cents per share before trending higher sequentially throughout the remainder of 2024. The company has beat earnings expectations 5 out of 8 times over the past 2 years. And you'll see that quite a bit of a trend for most companies, is they tend to actually beat on average analyst expectations. But there has been a lot of media attention around Musk, both as a CEO and his compensation package, as well as the weakening EV demand and resulting price cuts from that. This quarter could really move the needle on how investors vote for Musk's previously voided record compensation package, which previously he was looking at, I think it would be about an equivalent of $58, $60 billion. Now it's down to $47 just with the stock price declining. And that vote's in June. And so this will be the last earnings call. So this could be perhaps the most important earnings of his life, not even just the company's. Past the actual financial earnings, the earnings call will have some additional info, of course, and likely will be pivotal as they do set expectations. And that's something which you'll actually see commonly for earnings calls to actually be what people focus on. You'll see an analyst beat, but then the stock's down 10%. Why is that? Normally it comes down to something in the earning call. So what you might see in this earnings call for Tesla is focus on the weaker deliveries over the first quarter, as they do release those numbers beforehand. They had higher production, but lower deliveries compared to that production. And I believe actually year over year as well. Some of the other topics might be the recent recall in the Cybertruck over the past week. I think that was last Friday when they said that, as well as robo-taxis and the rumored but denied cancellation of the Model 2 version of the car. So moving on to Meta, previously Facebook, symbol META or Meta on the NASDAQ. The stock is up 39% year to date at $4.81 a share. Analysts are expecting earnings per share to grow a strong 98% to $4.36 per share from $2.20 in the prior year. The stock has beat earnings 6 out of 8 times over the past 2 years. Some of the topics that are likely to be mentioned is the company's adoption and integration of AI. The company has invested heavily in AI infrastructure, specifically NVIDIA H100 GPUs, which will be employed throughout 2024 and into 2025. The question really should be on investor mind when it comes to this is this significant CapEx actually improving the underlying companies and improving their products? And will those improved products actually help create improved returns? Because if you're investing billions upon billions of dollars into a certain type of infrastructure, you expect some sort of return, even if it is not immediately. It might be a year or two down the line, but you'll start to see it needs to shape up. Because it's really been about a year since that big AI gold rush in across the NASDAQ, really. The company has a wider range of CapEx guided for 2024 at the end of last quarter. So it'll be interesting if they guide it. It initially was at the end of last quarter, $30 to $37 billion in CapEx spending for the year. So it'll be interesting. Are they starting to look at the low end, high end? You might not hear anything about that in the first quarter, but going into Q2, Q3, normally they might narrow that guidance or move the needle a bit. as they have more info for themselves. Past AI, the company may have an increased focus on Reels as well. That's their short form content in the wake of the regulatory crackdown of TikTok. With the, as the US, they just passed a bill last week, which could force either a ban on TikTok or a forced sale of the app. Meta may be a beneficiary of this by increasing its market share of short form video content. Now, moving on to Microsoft, the company is up a nice 8% year to date at $400 a share. Analysts are expecting EPS of $2.84 a share, up 16% from $2.45 a share in the prior year. The company has beat earnings expectations 7 of 8 times over the past 2 years. Some topics that are going to be front and center are really the growth of the Azure, Microsoft's cloud platform, the growth of Office and its all-around productivity suites, as well, of course, the adoption and integration of its AI assistant Copilot. Copilot, it was launched last September. So it'll be interesting to see, has there actually been uptake of the AI assistant? Are they just seeing a flat line? Or is it corporate? Is it consumer more? It is, at this time, primarily focused on corporate or enterprise, I should say. But it'll be interesting to see how that comes out, because it will also stage, are they going to be investing more in AI as well? And that's the theme which you're seeing throughout all these companies is, are their AI investments starting to work out? Because you're going to be able to start seeing these numbers in not just Q1 or fiscal Q3, I should say, for Microsoft, but all the throughout the rest of the year, as it's been really that year. So they've actually had time to put in other software or hardware or so on and investing in AI products. So rounding out the week is Alphabet. The stock is trading at $150, up 14% year to date. Analysts are expecting EPS to grow 29% to $1.50 a share from $1.17 in the prior year. The stock has beat expectations as well, 5 of 8 times over the last 2 years. So, like I said, all 4 of the companies which are covering, they've actually beat expectations over half the times. So either analysts are expecting too little, or they just want to sandbag themselves a bit, so they always have that bit of upside, which it will vary by the analyst, of course, because these are consensus analysts, I should say. The eyes for Alphabet are always on search, though, especially given the push in the last year by Microsoft to promote its Bing with AI integration. Search, Google search dominance has so far remained strong, but if there was any broad sense of change, if people start to actually use Bing or any other search engine in light of AI, the stock would be hit quite hard. So it is always an important question. It's something you want to monitor, especially with all these AI products, which are quite similar to search in the sense that it's really asking people's questions and then how they integrate with further search options. So as well, Alphabet is directly competing against Microsoft again in cloud computing with Google Cloud. So its growth will also be something you do want to watch as well. Google's AI assistant Bard on its Gemini platform will likely have some interest as the AI product market is still competitive. And it'll be interesting to see how this all really plays out across not just Alphabet, Google, even medium and small cap companies, anything from a seed company to venture to small public to large, massive mega companies like these guys. It'll be interesting to really see how the AI software side plays over the next year or two, because you really should be seeing the fruits come out over the next year or two, because it was only really last year we saw with the GPT 3.5 and then now 4 and looking at 5 explosion, and now we should actually see some of the products really hit the returns and anywhere it goes from there. So yeah, I'll open up to you guys if you have any comments.
Yeah, I think that one thing, like I'll share my screen here just to show and I'll just, this is from Yahoo Finance as well, just as we are in the earnings season. So they ended up posting this and saying the broader market is having a digestion problems in and around this earnings season. And this is from Julian Emmanuel, who leads the Evercore ISI's equity derivatives and quantitative strategy. So he's talking to Yahoo Finance. So he says, this has broadly been seen across stock reactions the day following the release of quarterly results for the 65 S&P 500 companies that have reported results so far this season. Stocks that top Wall Street's estimates have risen 0.8% in the next trading session, slightly lower than the 0.9% average seen over the last few years. per Emmanuel's research. Meanwhile, companies that disappoint on both metrics are taking a bigger hit than normal, with the average stock falling about 5.8% in the next trading session compared to the usual 3.1% decline seen over the past 5 years. And he says here, given these extended valuations in the S&P 500, even good news may not be good news, particularly in these names that have run as far as they have. So I think that that's just kind of something that we're seeing during this earnings season as well. You know, so many stocks have, especially these, you know, large tech stocks have taken quite significant runs. And, you know, how are they going to react to, you know, either a gain or an earnings beat or an earnings miss? It's going to be interesting. And I guess we will see.
Well, they're expected based on valuation, they're expected to continue to grow. So, and then when I think you'd mentioned, Brett, you know, these companies are generally, they've been for the most part exceeding analyst expectations, but is that just because analysts have been deliberately setting their expectations low? Right. So, but as that happens, that then becomes the expectation, I think, as well.
Yeah. And I think the reaction there is a bit typical for a market that is priced on the higher end. You're just going to have, if you're priced closer to perfection, if there's anything in those numbers or anything in the commentary that is deemed to be slightly weaker than expected, then you're going to find a way to sell off. And typically you see that unless everything's perfect or something comes out of nowhere and actually surprises the street, then you can have an upside. I would say out of those numbers, like, I really hate to oversimplify it, but we talk about this all the time. It all comes down to cash flow and earnings per share growth. The growth expectations we see from Microsoft there, Meta and Alphabet, and the share prices have done well. There's a decline expected for earnings, and Tesla has done poorly. Again, it's somewhat oversimplifying what's going on, but in the end, over the long term, if you're not growing cash flow per share, and obviously don't have an expectation of doing that over the near and long term, your share price is going to suffer. And you can see the companies three there that are going to have likely or expected to have higher earnings have done well this year. Tesla, on the flip side, lower earnings expected, not doing well. Fairly simple.
And I will just add into that is normally for these mega cap companies is the analyst coverage is generally pretty close. It's unless there's like a one-time gain or loss, normally they're within at least a ballpark of it. So those financial figures shouldn't be too big a surprise. Yeah. So when you are saying a beat, it might only be a cent or two or a loss of a cent or two, which in reality doesn't move the needle or shouldn't move the needle.
In terms of price big surprise. A lot is probably going to come down to the commentary within the within the earnings call.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on to our next section here. I'm going to share my screen. TFI International, formerly known as Transforce, trades around $200, $16.92 billion market cap, pays a small yield, 1.1%, but it has grown its dividend. They again, like I said, TFI is formerly known as Transforce, has grown rapidly through acquisitions, and now stands as the largest trucking company in Canada. Operations span the spectrum of North American trucking from package and courier or PNC to less than truckload or LTL and truckload, which is TL and logistics. I will quickly point out that TFI International stock has performed very well over the past 5 years and all time for that matter. You can see a chart here over the past 5 years. See, the stock is up 357% over that time. Long term, it's hard to bet against the execution from this business. But let's take a quick look at the current fundamentals for the business. Now, this slide should give you a snapshot. There's a lot of numbers slapping you in the face there. But over the past 10 years, you can see steadily increasing revenues over that time. Note the post-COVID pent-up demand and increased pricing spike period. That would be 2021 to 22, and the pullback in 2023, but generally an upward trend through the past decade. Gross profit or earnings and earnings from continuing operations and normalized EPS follow the same trend. Net debt has increased over that time, but at a lower pace than revenues and earnings, which is a good thing. And the share count is actually down over the past 10 years from share buybacks. It's a good sign and one we don't often see. Let's look at the last quarter. Revenue was flat at $1.9 billion, essentially before fuel charge. After that surcharge, it's $1.67 billion, just up slightly from $1.62 billion in the prior period. Operating income here dropped to $198 million from $216 million in the same period. Net income dropped to $131 million from $153 million. Adjusted Q4 2023 net income was $147 million, down slightly from $151 million. EPS was $1.53 for the quarter, down from $1.74. Adjusted EPS was basically flat at $1.71 for Q4. Net cash from operating activities grew 22%, and free cash flow was up 29%. Generally, TFI is experiencing a period of weaker freight demand, but has kind of capitalized on this period of solid cash flow by significantly investing about $2 billion of capital during 2023 into announced acquisitions, a number throughout the year, and share buybacks. Let's take a quick look at the balance sheet here. Just a quick summary there. Cash is about $335 million. Debt is $2.34 billion, and net debt is about $2 billion. The valuations, in summary, EV to adjusted EBITDA on a trailing basis, about 13.3. EV to adjusted EBITDA based on forward-looking numbers is 12.2. The PE right now is 21 trailing, and going forward, it's around the range of 18 to 19. So conclusion here, there are near-term headwinds that remain industry-wide. We can look at some of the peer comparisons, a company called J.B. Hunt in its industry. Q1 revenues ex fuel, they said, decreased by 7% year over year. And income was actually down significantly, around 30%, they're saying, due to a combination of lower volumes and yield pressure. Looking ahead, their management commented that they have not witnessed any material pickup in demand and believe that there's about 20% excess capacity in the industry. Now, I'll look at current valuations in a second, but there's some other commentary in the industry from a couple other businesses were similarly negative. Overall, the peer takeaway, near-term weakness continues. So the current estimates from analysts for TFI may be a bit optimistic. So let's look at the current valuations. We already looked at that. I'm going to summarize it right now. Current valuations, they look okay, but slightly above general market valuations. And this is an industry that has higher than average volatility, and that is currently seeing weaker demand. TFI is a monitor in our research because of that. A sell-off of between 10 to 20% may be a long-term opportunity for this business, which has been a great capital compounder over time. Of note, the company will be reporting its Q1 fiscal year 2024 results this week, Thursday, April 25th. After the market closed, they'll have a conference call on Friday, and we will be monitoring that conference call. All right, that will end my segment there, and I'll stop sharing my screen.
Good. Yeah, TFI is a company. I've been following this company for years, particularly in our income research, our Canadian income research, and it's definitely a good stock. It has, over time, been a great performer. I'm going to just say that I agree with your conclusion. I think it's fairly valued at this price. Mm-hmm. Long term, it's a good company. You know, somebody who's looking to hold it for 5+ years is probably going to do reasonably well on it. Now, some people will ask, well, what do you mean it's fairly valued? Is that good because it's fair? Fairly valued just means, you know, we don't consider it, we don't see any real valuation opportunity in it. It's not overpriced necessarily. It's not underpriced. It just kind of trading more or less where we think it should be, at least in the near term. So that would kind of more indicate it as a hold, particularly in the near term. But, you know, long term, I think it's probably gonna perform reasonably well.
And we were talking about earnings surprises and misses, or misses to the downside or upside. If this company were to surprise to the downside and it had a 20% pullback, you know, over the next 3 to 6 months, because the industry, generally speaking, isn't performing as well are seeing weaker demand. It has been a company that has executed well over the long term. It looks to be investing in the business to in a downturn for the industry and potentially can come out of that stronger. So we would be monitoring to see, okay, is it trading at reasonable valuations? Has it gone 20% below? And do we think we can buy it at an opportune time? So we might look at that over the course of this year. And if there is an opportunity and it trades significantly below what we call fair value, and then it would move, it has the potential to increase over that over the long term, then it would be a situation we might look at. All those things have to come together, though, for us to actually have a recommendation on the company. All right.
I was just going to add quickly as well, like if you're looking at these companies for the long term, something which is beneficial is they are actually growing their dividend over the long term. They've consistently done it. And that's TFI, something you'd like to, yeah, TFI. Yeah. So then you can, if you do end up needing to or wanting to hold it for 5 or 10 years, you will, they might only have a yield of 1% right now. And if you're buying at a 20% discount from where they are right now, that would be what, 1.5%. And then you're holding it for what, 5, 10 years, they might double or triple their payout. So you're actually getting a decent yield by that time on your initial investment, which is always good to see if as an option.
And that's why and like Aaron specific is always looking for dividend growth stocks, like companies that consistently grow that dividend over time. You may have a 1% yield, you know, if it's a 3% yield today, but if you look back 10 years and they're growing that, you know, anywhere from 5 to sometimes we see 15 or 20%, if they can really grow cash flow, your effective yield, we talk about this, and I think we'll do an upcoming seminar where we maybe talk about effective yield and how that can compound in your favor over the long term. But it's very striking in terms of the returns, and I don't think it's talked about enough. So it's something we should probably talk about, how powerful that growth in the dividend can be over time. Yep. All right, let's get out of here. I'm kidding, Brendan.
It's Aaron first too.
Aaron. Oh yeah. You know what? You know what screwed me up is because Brett went first. I can't handle
that. He puts it on me, but he's the one.
I blame the guy below me. But it's probably not even right. Three people.
No, that is actually right. You got it.
Okay. It looks like that. Anyways, we got four people left to actually. I haven't even presented either, probably, for all I know, right? No, okay. All right, let's get to Aaron because he's. I'm actually looking forward to this segment. This happens. Well, this happens quite a bit where, you know, we're getting more and more viewers to our podcast. So you get more and more good and, you know, people who own a stock that you say, well, don't buy, or we say don't buy. And they say, how can you say that? How dare you? You know, they lose it on you. So I think Aaron's going to talk about when he looked at this company and how he said, you know what? I don't see value in this right now. We'll see what the company's done over that period and what some people maybe said about that, because I know. And there was another company that we actually said, if you want exposure to electrification, why don't you look at that company? And we'll see how well that company did versus Exro.
Great. Okay. Well, I'll take over the mic here. So as Ryan said, this is a review of a company that I did a Your Stock, Our Take on about 9 months ago. It was back in June, July, during the summer. So the company is Exro Technologies. And at the time, what I said about the company was that it was a very interesting technology, potentially in the future selling into an interesting space. They had some targets upcoming, but really nothing financial had been achieved yet in terms of tangible financial results. So minimal revenue, really losing a lot of money. So I said, it's still speculative, but it's worth keeping on maybe your radar. And if it starts hitting some of these targets, showing something, signs of profitability, revenue growth on the financial statements, you could maybe consider it at some point in time, but just to keep an eye out. I thought that was a fairly balanced perspective to take. But you know, a lot of times when we're dealing with these companies that are pre-profitability, pre-revenue, and they have some type of a technology, there's a lot of really sensitive investors out there. So you can go to the YouTube channel, our YouTube channel, and take a look. But there are a lot of comments. A lot of people were not happy with my assessment of Exro, even though I thought it was very balanced. I thought it was a balanced assessment. A lot of comments, you know, like this. What does this person say? Chap said it best. I assume I'm Chap. Is that correct? Yeah, I'm Chops. So I said it best. X-Rose technology is too complicated for these guys to understand. Therefore, they don't comprehend the coming revenue potential. Okay, so this is typically what we will hear from people when we're talking about high technology companies that have produced nothing financially. So a lot of times, like, no revenue, definitely no profitability. So we will be dismissive of it, not from the perspective that it could one day do something, but from the perspective that it has not done anything tangible up until that point in time. And therefore, whatever technology they have has not yet been validated, right? Because management can say whatever they want. They can talk about partnerships. You know, until money actually comes from customers to the company to buy their product or service, it doesn't really mean anything. So what we hear a lot are people just saying, well, you don't understand, right? You don't have the ability to understand the technology. To which I say, okay, that's a fair point, but that's the point that I'm making. And I flip that on other people as well. Do you really understand the technology? I agree. I'm not an expert when it comes to e-mobility technologies. So what I want to see is a validation of that technology before I go forward and just take somebody else's perspective, like the CEO or investor relations or another investor, somebody who obviously has a vested interest and may not be trying to be dishonest, but certainly has a perspective that they are incentivized to take. So the fact that, you know, the technology is complex and has potential does not necessarily mean that it's commercially viable. And of course, there is a few comments like this: your analysis is worth what I paid for it, zero. So, you know, we get the sharp ones straight to the point. You don't like what we said, but we break down the reason why, right? We don't just say, oh, we don't like this company. I mean, certainly, as I said before, I think the technology is interesting, but the first thing we need to look at is financially, is that technology validated, right? So anyways, we're going to do a review. And since then, things have not gone well for X-Row and its investors, at least not in the stock market. So when we did our original Your Stock, Our Take on the company in summer of last year, it was trading at $2.22. It is now down about 72%, down to about $0.63. From $2.22 down to $0.63. So whatever the company has been doing has not been received well by the market, right? And that was the concern that we had. A lot of times, you know, companies that have targets that they're trying to achieve, you'll have an opportunity to actually buy in if they start achieving those targets before the stock price really starts to take off, right? You'll be able to see some tangible evidence that those targets are going to be achieved or that they're making progress towards it before the stock is, you know, before all the opportunity to buy is gone. So why not manage risk by doing that as opposed to just taking the most optimal case scenario and assuming it's going to be true and investing based on that? That's basically all we're saying, right? So let's take a look at the company today, X-Row, about a 200 million market cap. Those shares have about doubled since we last looked at the company about 9 months ago. I'll talk about that. Also, preferred shares existing on the company, I'll talk about. But just for those who aren't familiar with it, X-Row is an e-mobility technology company developing advanced power control electronics and propulsion systems for electric vehicles or EVs. Their core technology is the coil driver and adaptive traction inverter that optimizes electric motor performance. Very big event for the company in January of this year, X-Row merged with another company called C Electric, an automotive and e-mobility technology company that provides a 100% electric drivetrain system technology. Okay, so why don't we just take another look at the company's financial results so you can see what we're seeing and how we would look at a company. And we're putting the technology and the future potential aside. We just want to see what has the company achieved so far. So they did put out their year-end results. Q1s aren't out yet. This is, of course, pre-merger. But the revenue growth is actually pretty good, although revenues are still relatively minimal. But $5.7 million in revenue in 2023, up from $2.1 million. Good increase in the gross profit. But if you look down at the earnings figure, this company has lost a huge amount of money. So $50 million has been burnt in terms of negative earnings over, over the year. So that's up in spite of, you know, the increase in revenue, although revenues is not really a very relevant factor right now because they're still so low. But they burnt through $40 million in 2022, another $50 million in 2023. So they're losing gobs of money. If we're to look at the quarterly figures here, our revenue for the fourth quarter of the year, $935,000 compared to $1.8 million. So big drop in revenue actually in the fourth quarter, although albeit an increase in the gross margin. But then when we look at the net loss, a fourth quarter net loss of $18 million or almost $19 million up from just under $13 million in the same quarter of the previous year, right? So, you know, certainly in terms of the financials that they have produced so far for the market, they leave a lot to be desired. Looking at the balance sheet, they have about $6.2 million in cash. They have total debt and leases of about $19 million. And they burnt through in terms of cash flow. So I would say that's negative operating cash flow plus capital expenditures was just under $52 million last year. So if you were to just take their cash reserve that they had at the end of the year relative to their cash burn, that would only give them about 1.5 months of runway. Now, things have changed since then. They did do that that merger, which doesn't necessarily bring a lot of cash to the balance sheet or improve that picture, but they also announced a share financing. And the point here is that this company is still in the position where it is highly, highly dependent on share financings in order to survive, just to keep the lights on, right? And for us, that is where the speculation is, right? A business that is non-speculative at a very base level should be selling a product or service and using the revenue and ideally the profits that they generate from that or the operating profit to keep the business a going concern, keep the lights on, pay the employees, keep the business alive, as opposed to relying on the markets. Because, well, what's the problem with that? If whatever your timeline is for achieving significant revenue or profitability is delayed, which can happen for different reasons, economic reasons, industry reasons, maybe you know, a certain technology advancement doesn't turn out exactly the way that you want, or a key customer just decides to delay. Now, all of a sudden, you need money just to basically survive. So you need to go to the market, you need to raise money from shareholders. But if the market is not in a healthy situation, if there's a downturn in the market, if the appetite for companies that aren't profitable is not high, you may not be able to raise that money, or you may have to raise it at a very low price, which is not a good thing for existing investors. So this is where, you know, we really start to differentiate between speculation and a more sustainable business. Now, these numbers are really less relevant now. Again, they're not going to only have 6.2 million in cash. They are raising more shares in the market. So we'll talk a little bit, just really briefly, about this merger that they recently completed. So with this merger, with this technology, what they are targeting is they're targeting the delivery of more than 1,000 propulsion technology systems to OEMs in 2024. So that's this year. That's what they're targeting, and forecasting revenue in the current year to be over $200 million. And potentially they're on the road for profitability within 12 months as of the acquisition, or as of the merger completion date. So this sounds pretty good. I mean, if they are, one, able to achieve those targets, and that's still a big if. What have they had to do so far to complete this merger? Well, they added 146 million plus shares, common shares, to the company. So they were at about 170 million shares to do the merger. They had to add another 100 and almost 150 million. So now they're at 315 million shares. They also had to add 160 million preferred shares. So this is what you have to do in order to keep the business running and invest in your technology when you're not actually getting money from customers, is you have to massively expand that share base. Now, what does that mean? Well, maybe they do achieve that target of $200 million in revenue for the year, and maybe they do achieve profitability. But when you have, you know, plus they're raising another 42 million. So by the time that profitability is achieved, maybe you have 500 million shares out, 600 million shares out. That's a lot of shares, especially for a company this size. That is a lot of shares. You have to generate pretty significant earnings in order to get any type of EPS off of that, right? So this is the risk. And if there's any type of delay in their timeline to achieving this profitability or achieving this level of revenue, then of course they have to go back to the market. They have to raise more. So this is the issue that we're dealing with here. Our take on X-Row, we say it continues to be speculative. The targets are interesting, but again, even if they make 200 million in revenue, how much profitability are they going to be able to draw to the bottom line? We still don't know what the margin profile is going to look like. There are just a lot of unknowns. So I'm just going to say again, I mean, I don't want to bag on this company. I don't want to say that it's, you know, not going to be ultimately successful. I don't know. I just haven't seen the tangible evidence yet that it's going to transition from being what I consider to be a very speculative company to a sustainable business. What would I look for over, say, the next year? Well, I would want to see a ramp up in commercial production. So they did start, I believe, what they refer to as commercial production in the fall. But the CEO did say that they're starting, you know, at a very low level and ramping up very slowly. So we haven't really seen a full ramp up as far as I'm aware. At this point in time, we want to see, you know, that commercial production ramp up significantly. We want to see concrete, tangible progress towards achieving the goal of 200 million. So, I mean, if they put out a quarter with 50 million in revenue and a significant decline in operating loss, that's a really good sign. And then also indication of what the margin profile is going to look like when they actually do achieve that level of revenue. You know, are they going to be able to drop much of that to the bottom line in terms of earnings and enough whereby they can generate meaningful earnings per share? Okay, so this is just really, it continues to be a show me story from the perspective of Keystone. That's it. I'll open up the...
No, and I mean, it's a good point. It's a general point on our research to say that we are looking for companies that have already shown us. They've shown us they have good growth in revenues, good growth in earnings, and good growth in cash flow, and they're trading at reasonable valuations. And then you've got the comments like, well, then you've missed out on the story. Well, you know, we were told that right after this. When Aaron did the segment on X-Row, we said we'd rather buy a company called Hammond Power at the time. We think because it has good solid revenues, good solid earnings, good solid cash flow, and traded at reasonable valuations and had those fundamentals to back up what the business is doing. And I can share my screen quickly just to show you. This is X-Row over that period of time. It's down 70%. We said Hammond Power in that range. It's up over the past year about 231%. And we talked about the reasons for this. Well, it's good growth in revenue and earnings and cash flow over that time. But you know, you can see the growth in terms of revenue up 27% over the past year, net income 41%, EBITDA is up 40% over the past year. And that's what we're looking at to drive a company over the long term, a good solid business with good solid cash flow. And I'll highlight here on Hammond Power as well. As you can see, the share count over that period, about 10 years ago, 11.7, 11.9. So basically no issuance of shares. They haven't needed or been beholden to the capital markets. And you know, this is a company that's performed tremendously well over the long term, a business that we can understand as well. So there is... kind of in a nutshell, the way we look at the markets, a company that was brought to us, X-Row, we were asked to evaluate the company. We said, okay, based on our criteria, it doesn't meet our criteria because it hasn't proven out in terms of having cash flow in the business. Here's another selection that you can benefit from electrification that is involved with the electrification sector right now, creating cash flow and earnings. And you can see the juxtaposition in terms of Exro down 70% and Hammond Power over that same period up around 230%. That's why we look at companies with cash flow and earnings to give us better returns over the long term. All right. Any other further comments on that?
Do you know how much SEA or C, I'm not sure which it is actually adding to the revenue just off? I don't know. I couldn't find it if they announced it anywhere. Because that'd be interesting.
I have not. Now, there were some documents that they had on their merger website that may have had them. I know that they, as they said, the combined company, they're targeting $200 million in revenue, but that's assuming 1,000 units sold through the year. So that wouldn't, since it's a private company, I'm not sure if that.
Yeah, I couldn't find any either. I was just curious because
it's not going to be like, I mean, I could look further, but it's not going to be very meaningful, because if it was very meaningful, like there is, you know, 50, 60 million in revenue there, then that would have been included in the press release.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well. So it really is requiring them both to grow, which is the point I wanted to make. Mm-hmm. They aren't coming in with 100 million revenue off their acquisition, anything like that.
I don't believe so, no.
So it is really two early stage production companies merging together more than anything.
Yeah.
It's interesting. We'll watch the company over the course of the year. But again, with the share count, to have a per share cash flow measure that's going to make them look either undervalued or fairly valued, they have to have a significant hard number on cash flow going forward. And we'll see if they can execute on that. You've already lost 75%.
Like that is then going to be, you know, not have to do a rollback at some point in the future, right? I mean, I don't think I've ever seen it where the share structure starts to get like that before you're even close to profitability. And then everything just turns out fine.
And we would expect some kind of share consolidation.
I hope it is successful, to be honest. I mean, yeah. I think it'd be great to have a successful clean tech company like that.
In the Canadian market. I mean, there's far too few of them, right?
Prove me wrong. I just haven't seen any evidence.
And that's why when we're deploying our money, when we're mainly deploying our clients' money, that's why a basic tenet to our researchers for a company to have cash flow and grow that over time. And if we don't see that, doesn't mean it's a horrible company, but it doesn't make our criteria. So saying that we're wrong based on a company not making our criteria doesn't make a lot of sense. Feel free to disagree. And we'll continue to, you know, revisit those situations over the long term. All right, Brennan.
Yay.
TELUS Corporation, symbol T. We got a question on this company down 37%, I believe, year to date.
Year over year.
Or is it over the last
2020,
year?
2020, yeah, over the last year. But
52 weeks.
I'll dig into it here, though. So email came in from Peter, and he says, how low can TELUS shares go and why? So TELUS Corporation, T on the TSX, currently trading at a price of just under $22, about a $32 billion market cap, and about a 6.85% dividend yield. And the company provides a range of telecommunications and information technology products and services in Canada. And it operates through two segments, its technology solution segment, as well as its digitally led customers experiences segment, with about 86% of its business coming from the technology solutions segment. So since early 2022, the stock is down approximately 37%. And let's do a little digging to see why we have seen the pullback. So looking at the last quarter or the financials here, Q4 of 2023, revenue was up 2.8% year over year. And this was led by strong performance in its core telecom business, with the strongest Q4 customer growth on record, with a total of 404,000 net additions, which is up 34% year over year. And the company also experienced its highest mobile phone net additions since 2010, with 443,000 net new customers. Adjusted EBITDA was up 9.4% to $1.8 billion year over year, and net income to common shareholders was up 16% to $288 million or 20 cents per share year over year, and free cash flow was up about 83% to $590 million. So fundamentally, I believe that the results have been decent. Now, looking at the balance sheet, Net debt was $26.6 billion, which provides a trailing net debt to EBITDA multiple of about 3.7 times. And if we look at the same period last year, net debt was about $24.2 billion, and the net debt to EBITDA multiple was about 3.6 times. So debt has increased slightly year over year. But the weighted average interest rate in 2023 was 4.33%, up from about just 4% in fiscal year 2022. And to put this into perspective, for the 2023 year, interest paid increased by about $380 million. Now, looking at the company's guidance for fiscal year 2024, are their targets. They anticipate their technology products and services segment revenue to grow about 2-4% and adjusted EBITDA to grow 5.5-7.5% and consolidated free cash flow to be about $2.3 billion, providing a forward price to free cash flow multiple of about 13.9 times. And just comparables here. So this compares to Rogers, which trades at about 9.6 times forward free cash flow, and BCE Inc. or Bell, which trades at about 13.9 times forward free cash flow. So the same as TELUS here. But it is worth noting that Rogers does have significantly higher debt compared to both TELUS and BCE, which is a reason for the lower price to free cash flow multiple, as it does not consider debt. And if we look a year ago when TELUS was trading in the $27 range, the stock was trading at about 20 times forward free cash flow at that time. Quickly looking at the dividend, the company has increased the dividend for 14 consecutive years with the payout ratios generally over 100%. But if we look at any of the Canadian telecoms, including Rogers and BCE, we typically see the same thing with payout ratios of over 100%. Now, to answer Peter's question on how low TELUS's shares can go and why we are seeing the drop, I think that it comes down to a few things. So number one, increased leverage and elevated interest rates are placing pressure on the business. I think the debt is sustainable, but is certainly causing a bit of a headwind to profitability. And higher interest rates are leading to a reduction in residential and business development project work compared to 2022. Now, entering 2023, the business was trading at over 20 times forward free cash flow, which was a bit pricey. And during the year, they ended up revising their guidance lower, given headwinds facing the TELUS International subsidiary as clients began to proceed more cautiously to spend on digital transformation in the current macro environment. And these pressures continue to persist into fiscal year 2024, which even led TELUS to begin to break out its own guidance for their technology solution segment, whereas before they had consolidated their revenue guidance inclusive of TELUS International. So compared to 2023, growth in fiscal year 2024 is anticipated to slow on the top end. We are still anticipated to see some free cash flow growth, though. So on how low the stock can go, I really think this is anyone's guess. But given the attractive yield, the now more reasonable free cash flow multiple, and focus in 2024 on cost efficiency with restructuring investments of approximately $300 million, as well as management voicing the desire to delever its balance sheet further, I believe the stock should gain more of a footing in its current range. Now, if interest rates do come down in Canada, I think there could be an argument for the stock to potentially get some legs. But overall, you know, for these low growth telecoms, it's more the dividend that gets us excited. And considering the yield is just shy of 7%, I think that the business is reasonably attractive. And that is my piece.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at TELUS, I mean, it's essential assets, right? So I don't think TELUS is going to go anywhere. As you said, that dividend is probably more attractive than I've ever seen TELUS pay in, you know, 20 years as an income stock, and the dividend's growing on an annual basis. So that's very attractive. Now, on the other hand, that high payout ratio is, you know, not really what I want to see either. So I think if they had that payout ratio under control, I'd be jumping into this, but you know, obviously covered by free cash flow, but not even close by earnings. So,
yeah.
or even actually the free cash flow was over 100%.
It was still over
100%. Covered by that's operating correct. Cash flow. So, you know, correct. It's that's kind of more or less, it really comes down to that is the main reason why we're on the sidelines from an income perspective. Otherwise, we'd be buying it.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think that'll end off our show this week. There's nothing else we needed to get in. I haven't forgot. There's nobody else on the show this week that I didn't know about, that somebody scheduled someone. I'm kidding. All right. Well, that's good. Keep your questions coming in to our Your Stock, Our Take segment. If you're viewing this on YouTube right now, smash that subscribe button. And if you're watching this listening to this on iTunes, rate and review us, only positive reviews, as we always say. We will be off to Vegas next week. We may have a podcast next Monday. We'll see how that comes together. But we're off to Vegas next week to a conference. We're booked in with at least 15 companies to interview. So we should have some takes on some companies when we come back from that event. There's a couple companies that are already recommended to our clients that we'll be talking to. And then a whole host of new companies that are kind of vying to get into our research over the course of this next year. All right. Again, as I wish you, as always, I wish you profitable investing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.